Vegas Bad Boy of Podcasting is an entertainment-based wrestling program. The opinions shared are that of the host and their guests. Some celebrity voices are impersonated and usually not well. This program is not intended for kids and certain adults. Listener's discretion is advised. You have been warned. Now let's get ready to podcast.
Hey, this is the Highlander, Calvin McCall, and you're listening to the Vegas Bad Boy Podcast, and that can only be one.
Welcome to another edition of Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting. I'm DJ Impact. I got a couple of the bad boys here with me. Ah, King Lucky, you're here, huh?
I'm here. I'm definitely here. I'm excited to be here.
All right. Awesome, awesome. Matt Michaels.
What's up, bro?
What up, bro? All right, check it out. Hey, we got an awesome guest for you all. Now, let me kind of run down his resume here. He's an announcer, an actor. He does voiceover and mocap for WWE 2K Games. He's even a wedding officiant. But he's most notable at the moment for being the play-by-play commentator for Major League Wrestling. Let's welcome AJ Kirsch. How you doing?
I'm doing well, man. Thank you. Thank you for that extensive introduction as well. Hopefully I can live up to that hype.
No doubt.
Well, thank you for the extensive career. That's the thing. You've given us entertainment. So, you know, be proud of the accomplishments.
Thank you. Yeah. I am. It's been a good run so far. I keep trying to find ways to surprise and challenge myself. And so far that mindset has led me to some pretty awesome moments. So I'm very grateful.
So you hit The Rock with some good promo work, and you became the only Rock promo champion as Broseph Joe Brody. The question is, Matt Riddle or you, who's the one who started the bro?
I'm almost offended you would even ask. I'm not taking anything away from Matt Riddle's accomplishments in MMA or pro wrestling. He's a very talented performer. He's an amazing athlete. But I was doing Broseph Joe Brody when he was still in MMA, long before he had ever uttered the words in a professional wrestling ring. So I kind of scoff every time I see original bro on his gear. I'm like, come on, man, you're not fooling anybody. Original bro. It's not very professional, if you ask me. It's just not proper protocol, and it's a little disappointing. He's doing well for himself, though. Good for him.
Not to mention, he doesn't hail from Brooklyn.
No, he doesn't. Where does he hail from? I don't even know where he hails from.
Las Vegas.
Las Vegas? Okay, well, good luck working a bro pun into Las Vegas. Come on, man. Commit to the gimmick. At least be from Brolympia, Washington or something.
You know, speaking of wrestling and careers and the WWE, you did Tough Enough. You also were lucky enough to be on a season where there was a lot of good drama to it. The producers did a good job on the show. What did you take away from the Tough Enough experience that you've been able to apply to your career from that point on?
Really, the biggest thing that I took away from Tough Enough was if I were to have a future in professional wrestling after Tough Enough, and you know, some people do, some people don't. Obviously, The Miz has parlayed a hell of a career out of the Tough Enough that was on, that was a part of SmackDown. You know, Maven had a decent run, Nydia did well, and even some of the runner-ups. John Hennigan, John Morrison came from Tough Enough. Like, there's a lot of good talent came from Tough Enough, and so when I lost, I wasn't completely heartbroken. I was depressed that I had lost. But really, what I took away from it was, if I do have a future in pro wrestling, I think it's going to be behind a microphone. Because my shining moment on that show was episode 8 in the promo challenge when, you know, going into it, I had had some rough days up to that point. Martin, who is to this day a good friend of mine, he had to withdraw because he had broken his ankle. And had that not happened, I'm sure I would have been gone before he was. So it's, you know, by hook or by crook, I ended up making it to the eighth episode when The Rock was the judge for that skills challenge. And the skills challenge was cutting a promo. And I think I surprised a lot of people with the promo that I cut, including myself. Like, I knew I had to kind of swing for the fences on this one. And coming out of it, I'm like, if I'm not picked up, or if the WWE does not show interest in me after this run on Tough Enough, then I think I could do myself some good by continuing to explore the verbal side of professional wrestling. And I didn't know at the time that that meant commentary or hosting or ring announcing necessarily. I just thought it meant maybe being a mouthpiece for talent, or, you know, being more of just like a Bobby Heenan type, or and really now as I look back on my career and when I look at where I want my career to go, I would much rather be that Bobby Heenan type than anybody else, because he really was the jack of all trades in pro wrestling. He could manage, he could commentate, he can cut promos, he could bump. He could really do it all. And I want to be that utility player that anyone can put in any role and be able to deliver. So it was really a pivotal, it was a pivotal realization for me, coming out of that promo.
You know, the coolest thing about that too, is that you just mentioned that you're still good friends with Marty the Moth, which is amazing. And you look at some of the other people that came out of that class, including Watts, Eric Watts.
Sure.
You know, it's just nice that there's like a little lineage in that, you know, there's a little bond that is formed, because usually in reality TV, it's such a cutthroat type thing in terms of competitions. And you've gone on. Yeah. Go ahead, you've gone on to, that's okay. You've gone on to do so much with your career. Is it one of those things where that's just in your nature and personality, where you are able to make friends like that and keep friends, even though we're, you know, we're talking about a business that is very, very, you know, one guy says something to your face, another guy says something to your, you know, to your backside. Is it just part of who you are in terms of having a reputation of being such a good dude?
I would like to think that that's part of it. And I, you know, appreciate you saying so, but, I think the saying something to your face and something different behind your back is not just a part of professional wrestling. I think that's anywhere, any career where there are high stakes, or there's fame, or there's money, or there's a spot, quote unquote, to be had. I don't think that's just exclusive to professional wrestling. And, you know, WWE is the, to this day, the biggest stage in all of professional wrestling, sports entertainment, whatever you want to call it. It's all the same stuff. And so even though all of us had, we all knew there was only going to be one winner. We all knew that there was only going to be one top spot and one person coming out of Tough Enough with that contract. But that doesn't mean you have to be a dick. Like, you're all like, you had 14 people in that house who were all, well, most of them were passionate about professional wrestling. Most of them had, you know, would give an appendage to get that contract. And so there's, we all have far more in common than we have not.
Right.
But, and we're all, we all knew what was going on. There was only going to be one winner. But again, that doesn't mean you need to like be a dick. I don't know a better way to say it. You don't need to be a fucking dick if you're all, if y'all have the same goal. And, you know, I think me and Eric Watts formed a great friendship. Again, as I said, I'm still friends with Marty the Moth. And, you know, I see Matt Cross on shows from time to time. And it's just like another, it's a unique experience that a very small group of people get to share. And that's what makes for a bond that lasts years and years. I can't believe it was, what is this, 2020? It was 9 years ago. Good Lord.
Yeah. How about that?
Oh my God, I'm getting so old.
Aren't we all?
Getting vintage. Vintage.
Nine years ago, I would scoff at a 2-drink minimum. Now I go out and I'm like, it's a 2-drink maximum.
Yeah.
I have more than two drinks, I need to cancel whatever plans I had for the first part of my next day.
We're all hitting 40. Our liver's all hitting 80.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
AJ, were your aspirations as a kid always to be a professional wrestler?
Yeah. I mean, from 12 years old on, I started watching in the spring of 96, which was an amazing time to start watching wrestling. Yeah. It was always wrestling. Like before then, like I had dreams of playing baseball and like being a rock star and, you know, just those dreams that you have when you're a kid and you're just like all bright eyed and the weight of the world hasn't just mashed you into a million pieces yet. but it was the phase I never grew out of. That's how I like to describe it to people. And because I did start watching in the spring of 96, just when wrestling was on the cusp of Austin 316 and the NWO and this attitude that started bubbling from the surface, and wait, what's this over here? ECW starting to make some noise. It was an amazing time to start watching wrestling because as I was growing and becoming a teenager, wrestling was getting more brash and in your face and vulgar. And so I felt like wrestling was growing with me. And so I think that's one of the reasons why it just stayed with me through my more formative years. And, you know, to this day, there is still just nothing quite like pro wrestling.
Is it kind of fair to say that, when I was around that age, it was right around 1991, Nirvana hit.
Oh, and God.
It all changed, you know, like here I am, you know, 16 years old and it's like a new fucking world. All my hate and anger and aggression and, you know, I finally related to something. Can you say that? Because, again, I was already in my 20s going into the Attitude Era.
Right.
Is that a fair comparison that, you know, that aggression that, you know, that in-your-face style was kind of just relatable to what you were going through in your life at that time?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I was in high school when the Attitude Era really started picking up, and I wasn't necessarily a popular kid. I wasn't, like, you know, good with the ladies or anything. I was just kind of, like, playing video games with my friends and just trying to figure out life as one does when you're a teenager, and the biggest question is, what do you want to do with your life? And you just look around and you're like, fuck if I know, I'm just trying to make it to the weekend. Like,
yeah,
just trying to make it to the next day without feeling like pressure from every angle and just all this angst and everything. And so, you know, when I see Sean and Hunter just walking around pointing to their crotch and saying, suck it, I'm just like, I don't know why, but I relate to that. I like what I'm seeing here. Like Austin, like to this day, I'm not really a big beer drinker, but I never really enjoyed beer, but Austin beating the shit out of his boss, like, man, what I wouldn't give to give my teachers a stunner and like flap my head back and forth while I yell obscenities to their face as they flop like a fish, like Vince McMahon with his eyes glazed over. That was the worst sell I've ever seen. Like little things like that. Like it wasn't exactly, you know, I didn't have a boss at the time. I didn't relate to that like verbatim, but you know, rebelling against authority and you know, I'm a teenager, so it's like my dick's doing all this stuff, like,
yeah,
yep. Masturbating like a monkey when I get home from school, like, I'm like, I don't know why, but wrestling speaks to me.
Yeah,
yeah, suck it, fuck off.
And I saw in an interview a while back, you said heels have more fun. There were so many characters back in those days. You know, were they always your favorite growing up?
Oh no, quite the opposite. Shawn Michaels, when he was doing the whole boyhood dream thing, was my favorite. When I started watching wrestling, and then I'll never live this down. My second favorite was Ahmed fucking Johnson. had no idea how bad he was until he actually got in the wrestling business. But he was awesome. He was big and just this like tank. And you could never understand a word he said, except you're going down. Like, he was the original people's champion, by the way. He won the Intercontinental title from Goldust to King of the Ring in 96. And I'm a little embarrassed that I still remember this, but who cares? It's a wrestling podcast. And, like, you know, he's like, I'm going to defend this belt for the people, whether they're black, white, red, or green. And to this day, I remember that promo. He was the original People's Champion. I was like, yeah, that's awesome. So I really didn't get an appreciation for the heels until when did, I don't know. It wasn't really the NWO because I was still just like 12 or whatever. Who did I really appreciate? I think it was Mankind, actually. And like Mankind was active in 96. He debuted just after WrestleMania 12.
Right.
Which I think was actually April Fool's Day, now that I think about it. And again, fun fact. But he was, even though I knew wrestling was a show when I was 12 years old, like when I saw that character and I saw Bob Holly foaming at the mouth, like I had to walk into my parents' room and be like, wrestling's not real, right? And they're like, no, no, it's all a show. And then I look back at the TV and there's Bob Holly foaming at the mouth again. And I'm like, I don't know. Okay. Well, he looks like he's in bad shape, but whatever. That foaming at the mouth thing really convinced me that like that shit was legit. So, you know, Mick Foley made me question how not real it was. And so I think that's when I started really getting an appreciation for the heels. But like the more I got into it, like I started out, I made my debut in 2005 as a babyface. Shortly thereafter, I became a heel, and it was just, it's just more fun. I feel like you have more power over the crowd. You're able to antagonize the crowd. Nobody gives a shit about the babyface unless they want to see the heel get their ass beat. It's almost by default, really. Like, somebody could go into a wrestling show and know absolutely nothing about the babyface, but if they hate the heel, they will cheer the babyface just to beat the shit out of the heel. So, right. The heel's really in control of the match, in control of the crowd, and it's when you have an amazing heel like Vince McMahon and a babyface that works perfectly off that heel like Steve Austin that you really make magic happen.
Do you think that might be one of the issues that I think you can kind of pinpoint in wrestling today in terms of the WWE itself? And I think to some degree, the reason I think AEW is, you know, a little hotter is because of the fact that you have Jericho, who is a natural heel, mm-hmm. whereas you can't really point, like WWE right now, who is the top heel?
Well, let me ask you, who is the top heel, if you had to pick one?
That's it. Mm-hmm. I can't, I like, off the top of my head.
Brock Lesnar? The Fiend?
Baron Corbin, too? Yeah.
I guess, I see, like, to me, Corbin should be the top heel because of that reaction.
Exactly. No, well, he's got go-away heat. He's got Jeff Jarrett 1997 heat. That's why he's a heat. Like, I understand that by me saying, fuck Baron Corbin, like, it's very easy to be like, ha-ha, he's over. And it's like, he's a heel because he's not. I don't know. It's a vicious cycle now. Like,
but yeah, that's the thing. It's so complicated now because the Fiend really should be the top heel, but at the same time, the fans are making him more of a face.
I was going to say the Fiend should be the top face because he's just too cool. He's an amazing character.
Exactly.
But he's designed to be,
of course,
devilishly evil, right? So I guess what do they do? You know, maybe, you know, I'm just playing like nerdy wrestling fan right now, but maybe they bring back John Cena, who's pretty, you know, I'm actually quite curious to see what the reaction is going to be at WrestleMania with the Fiend and Cena.
Yeah.
Cena's always been very polarizing, and the Fiend, you know, flip a coin if the Fiend is booed or cheered. So I'm curious to see what the crowd's going to be like.
Well, it's the perfect mix, because the kids and the women will cheer Cena,
mm-hmm.
and then every guy in there will, you know, boo the hell out of him and
probably
he
didn't get that on SmackDown. He got a lot of love, Cena.
Well, they were in Boston,
sure, but yeah. Still, I mean, Boston, I mean, they could be like, Chicago or New York. If they don't like you, they'll boo you. But he That's got true, a but lot also, of love.
Cena was gone for a while. He's back in his hometown.
Absolutely.
People are, you know, that was a very deliberate decision to bring Cena back in Boston.
Yeah.
And to use that setup of the emotion of basically giving a retirement speech.
Right.
To me, that in Boston, you know, that set him up because there was the love there. And then now you leave off with the Fiend challenging him. From not being from Boston, I look at it as like, well, Cena's kind of a dick, man, right? He just kind of just threw this whole, you know, give me the sympathy. He made me feel for him. And now he's just wrestling right away.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from, but that's it's not Cena's I know it's a call.
I
yeah.
know stretch. It's a stretch.
Right. Also, though, I do wanna show some love for the challenge that the Fiend made. I am a huge fan of nonverbal promos, like nonverbal challenges, and there have not been many. Like, the only one that I can think of off the top of my head was actually same year as Tough Enough back in 2011 when Taker returned to Raw, and then before Taker could say a word, Triple H comes out, they stare off, Triple H looks at the sign, Taker looks at the sign, Taker scoffs, goes back to Triple H, gives him the throat slit, and then Triple H gives him the crotch chop. Like, so good. That's such good storytelling right there. So, for the lights to go out, the Fiend appears, the Fiend points, Cena looks at the crowd, gives him the tip of the cap. It's like, oh, shit's on. Like, I like stuff like that. I think if it's done too often, it'll eventually be done poorly, and it'll be overdone. But when you can get characters to make it happen without saying, you're on! Like, get out of here.
I agree with that.
Or who's fucking Batista going, ah! Like, come on.
Who do you think, of the people that you've personally worked with, and, you know, there's been a plethora of, you know, great talent that you've had the, you know, chance to work with. Who would you say is the best in-ring storyteller that you've worked with, and who's the best out of the ring in terms of, I mean, obviously you're great at promos. Who can match you in that area?
Ooh, that is a tough question because over the years, there have been a hell of a lot of people. Best in-ring storyteller, Jesus. I don't know. I've worked with so many amazing people that nobody's really jumping to mind, like, right off the bat.
Because, like, I look at a guy like Marty now.
Yeah.
He is so precise in the ring. He does things. He's thinking three steps ahead. And that's what I love about him.
Yeah. He's damn good. What I appreciate about Marty, too, is that he uses his face more than anything else. He has one of the most expressive faces that I've ever seen. Like, it could just be a smile or like a squint or like a gnashing of the teeth or something. But Marty is exceptionally good at using his face to tell the story. okay. Here's who came to mind after thinking about it again. There was a while when Brian Kendrick was quasi-regularly wrestling at Hood Slam, and he was in a feud with a character named Butternuts, and Butternuts was a stuffed horse that all of us just went along with the idea that he was real. And Kendrick had a match with Butternuts and made Butternuts look amazing. Butternuts hit a Hurricanrana off the top rope and landed on his feet.
Oh my goodness.
And then, to make a long story short, he bit off Brian Kendrick's dick and took out one of his eyes.
We're gonna need video.
And then Brian
Kendrick
took out a knife and cut off his head. This is all completely true.
We need video of this. Where's it at?
I think it's out there somewhere. Look up Hood Slam on YouTube or Twitch, hoodslam.tv.
All right.
Or maybe just Google Brian Kendrick dickless monster butternuts Hood Slam. Like, because after that match on commentary, I just referred to Brian Kendrick as a one-eyed dickless monster. And briefly, that was actually one of his nicknames on his Wikipedia, by the way. That's one of my proudest moments, is that Brian Kendrick, a one-eyed dickless monster, became a nickname of his on Wikipedia. So Brian Kendrick made a stuffed horse look really good. And I, you know, there have been the blow-up doll matches, and, you know, they say if you're really good, you can wrestle a broomstick. Well, Brian Kendrick made a stuffed horse look like it could do a hurricane run off the top rope and land on its fucking feet. So, tip of the hat to Brian Kendrick.
And for listeners that haven't experienced a Hood Slam show yet, that's what makes it totally unique.
Oh, yeah. If you have not experienced Hood Slam, it is wrestling on acid. It's amazing. It's 21 and over. People are drinking, smoking, carrying on. It's like 800, 900 people a month in Oakland. First Friday is the big one. I know this is probably going to air after First Friday in March, but I feel like this is a good time to mention, we have our 10-year anniversary show coming up on Friday, April the 17th. And quick backstory on the name of the show. So Vince McMahon, obviously, the tentpole event is WrestleMania. But for some reason, wrestling is a dirty word in the WWE. Vince likes referring to wrestling as entertainment. But he's never going to change the name of WrestleMania. So Hood Slam's annual tentpole event is Entertainia. And our 10-year anniversary, Entertainia 10, is happening Friday, April the 17th, Oakland Metro Opera House. And you can get tickets by searching Hood Slam on Eventbrite.com, but it's 21 and over. Don't bring your fucking kids.
I was waiting for right. that.
Oh, yeah. That's one of our taglines. It's, this is real. It's not that fake-ass MMA shit, by the way. This is real. Don't bring your fucking kids. And probably most importantly, fuck the fans.
And this, right. And this happened at Entertainia 5, April 3rd, 2015.
Oh, you looked it up! Amazing.
I've got a recap of the show, and okay. it really states the Brian Kendrick defeats Butternuts after Kendrick slits Butternuts' throat and rips off his head. Referee El Sparkle ruled that Butternuts could no longer continue and awarded the match to Kendrick.
Right. Because if you decapitate your opponent, really, what choice does the referee have?
Right. What's left?
Their hands are tied.
Oh, I can't wait to watch that.
You know, and AJ, you play a very interesting character, Brosive Joe Brody. What's the inspiration for that?
Prior to joining Hood Slam, I've like had my brushes with bro culture. I went to school at Chico State, which is a notorious party school. So even though I wasn't in a frat, I was surrounded by frat culture all the time. I worked as a bouncer in San Francisco and Sacramento in some of the douchiest neighborhoods that you can possibly think of. So I was around that all the time. And then, you know, they say that the best characters, you take shreds of your own personality. So in real life, I am a gym rat. I work out every day. And people don't believe me when I say it, but I unironically fucking love Nickelback. So I'm not kidding. Wow. I am not kidding. They're amazing. And if any of you are listening to this and you are you think differently, fuck you. You're a liar. You're in denial. Everybody knows and loves at least one Nickelback song, and it might be Photograph. It might be Rockstar. It might be How You Remind Me. But for all of you in denial, you'll never make it as a wise man, and you'll never cut it as a poor man stealing.
You know, there was a point where WWE really utilized those songs really good. And Nickelback.
Oh, yeah. Imagine how thrilled I was when that became the theme song for Monday Night Raw for a number of years. I was thrilled.
Yeah, absolutely.
I never let my friends hear the end of it.
Top favorite Nickelback song of all time?
Yes. All there of them? It is. I'd have to do like a top 10. Jesus Christ, Rockstar, Photograph, burn it to the ground. If today was your last day, how you remind me someday, figured you out, saving me. Like, there's so many good songs. Yes. How can anybody not like Nickelback?
All I got to say is 2002, we went to this one, I think it was 2002, we went to this one concert. It was Harley Davidson was celebrating its 100th anniversary.
Cool.
And we walk in, and it's me and my buddy, his girlfriend, and we're walking towards the stage, you know, big field. It was at like a motor speedway, huge field. And as we start walking towards the stage, we're there to see Stone Temple Pilots and Billy Idol.
Okay.
And
it's a hell of a lineup.
It was. And it was also Nickelback.
Why do you have to say it like that?
Because we literally, me and my bro, we looked at each other, and his girlfriend was like in heaven. It was like, oh, this is amazing. And we just look at each other and we're like, we're going to go fucking walk around a bit if you want to stay here.
Wow. Well, first of all, rude. Secondly, you couldn't stick around for classics like Hero? Everybody loves Hero.
Yes, I agree.
Thank you.
Hero was such a good song to end Spider-Man.
Right. And by the way, Stone Temple Pilots is opening for Nickelback when they go on tour this summer. No big deal. I'm just saying.
Well, you know, and I think they have a good relationship because, you know, they've worked together in the past, I believe, you know, outside of that show. But it was interesting because out of all, you know, those big lineups, Billy Idol was the one who had the fans going. I've never seen more.
Oh, he's a legend.
Oh, you know what? But I've never seen more like 30-year-old tits. It was amazing how many women just pulled their shirts up and were just like, hey, it was like Woodstock. It was crazy.
That's fantastic. Who doesn't like boobies?
Oh, no, it was great. But I figured like Nickelback or like Stone Temple Pilots would be the ones that would be drawing the shirts off. It was Billy Idol.
I don't know. I feel like Billy Idol's like from the past, like from that like 80s Motley Crue, Guns N' Roses, like girls on the shoulders of some dude with their tops off. Like, I feel like it's a different era. Like, STP and Nickelback are like new metal. Not necessarily. I guess STP is more like alternative, but like maybe a little bit more toward grunge, but not quite as depressing as like Alice in Chains. So it's not exactly like flash your tits rock.
Right.
Nickelback kind of became that with such classics as Something in Your Mouth. No other band has the balls to name a song Something in Your Mouth, by the way. But yeah, I mean, Nickelback, they started out with like How You Remind Me, and they had a couple other songs like Leader of Men, which like they had some dark stuff. But then I think as they got a little bit more successful, they started doing more just like drinking anthems and, you know, more fun shit. But if you listen to their stuff 2002 and prior, they're like pretty dark. They're pretty grungy. They get dirty and like gritty. But then Something in Your Mouth.
Well, speaking of Something in Your Mouth,
cannot wait to hear where this goes.
Right.
So, you know, I think that one of the cool things about you is that you've been very open about your life.
Uh-huh.
And just out of curiosity, in terms of top guy and top female out there in terms of like the celebrity crushes that you've had in the past.
Oh shit. Natalie Portman comes to mind first. She's so fucking cute.
Oh yeah.
You know who else I don't think gets enough love? Allison Hannigan. Remember her?
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Yep. American Pie and what was that show she was on? Was it How I Met Your Mother?
Oh, You Met Your Mother and then
Buffy. So cute.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
That's right. She's talk nerdy to me. Like, she's just super cute.
quick story. I'll keep it very quick. 2001, I was in the offices of Buffy the Vampire Slayer getting ready to audition for a part for Angel.
Oh, cool.
And I'm sitting there, I'm just looking at the sides, and all of a sudden, Joss Whedon and Allison Hannigan are walking, and she's talking to him, he's talking to her, and then all of a sudden, she stops paying attention to him, she's eyeballing me. And I was like, oh, shit. And it didn't, I mean, we didn't even cross paths outside of the glance, but I'll tell you, in terms of, like you said, cute girl, oh my God, just stunningly beautiful.
I am so jealous of that story. And as far as guys, Justin Timberlake comes to mind first.
Sure.
I mean, just phenomenally talented and equally handsome.
Yep.
Fucking Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, yeah.
Hilarious. And just, you know, also just a really good looking guy. So those would be my four.
I'm kind of stuck in the 90s. I'd say Sarah Michelle Gellar and Ryan Phillippe.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Cruel Intentions.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And not only that, but I feel like Ryan Phillippe never got over as big as he could have. Especially coming off of that movie.
Yeah, that would have been the one that definitely would have launched him. But I don't think he did. I mean, he did some stuff here and there from what I remember. But I don't think he really blew up the way he could have.
Well, right. I mean, MacGruber.
Well, he definitely left his mark.
You know, really quickly, we touched on it earlier. You've done voice work and motion capture for WWE. How did that opportunity present itself to you?
That's actually a pretty funny story. So it started out with somebody from 2K coming to Hood Slam a couple times and then tracking me down on social media and saying, hey, would you like to come in and do some motion capture for us? And I'm like, duh. So they bring me in to take bumps, and then they're going to record the sound of the bumps and put those into the game. So we had to do everything from like the most ginger forward roll to like a superplex off the top so they could get a range of all the different bumps. I'm working with Mikey from the Spirit Squad. They brought him in to do that too. So we're working around. We're doing, you know, a second rope superplex, a top rope superplex, and they want us to get a sit-down power bomb before sit-out power bomb before lunch. So they get one. They want to do one more. I'm giving the move. And so we do one more. I get Mikey up on my shoulders, and as soon as his weight comes up on my shoulders, my left knee pops.
Ooh, like, ouch.
I feel a pop, a snap. I finish the move. I finish it safely. I roll out of the ring and try to put weight on it, and I can't do it. And of course, I'm trying to walk it off like the fucking pro wrestler, you know, mentality is you're supposed to do, and I'm not fooling anybody. So I actually tore my ACL and my meniscus with that move. And it was only like halfway through the day. Like, you know, I was getting a chance to, you know, I grew up playing video. My passion before pro wrestling was video games. So like, this is like, I feel like at the time it's my one and only opportunity to actually work on this perfect melting pot of my childhood passions. So I'm just like heartbroken. You know, I needed surgery to repair it. I mean, like, I was technically an employee of 2K, so like workers' comp covered everything, thank God. But I'm like just so heartbroken that that's how it happened. A couple weeks later, before I get the surgery, I'm able to walk on it okay, but it's definitely stiff, and you know, I need that surgery. So a couple weeks after the injury, I get I'm signed up with a talent agency here in the San Francisco Bay Area. They're the ones that send me out on auditions for acting and commercial work and voiceovers and whatever. So they say, we actually have a role that's a pretty good fit for you. It's a voiceover gig for this project. And I can't reveal what the working title is, but it was a working title. And they're like, it's about this wrestler who's, you know, trying to make their way from the indies to the WWE. And we know this is kind of your thing. And I'm like, yeah, great. Let's do it. So I go into the audition, read a couple lines, got good feedback from the woman running the audition. And, you know, I had written it off because usually you hear back a couple days later, a week tops, and right. like 2 or 3 weeks had gone by. And I'm like, well, fuck, like, on to the next one, I guess. I don't know who they got, but I hope, you know, I guess they were a better fit than I was. And then I remember exactly where I was. I was driving back from another audition, and I was at a red light, so I checked my email and got an email from somebody at 2K saying, hey, wow. We saw your audition. We loved it. And just so you know, working title is not actually working title. Working title is the story mode for WWE 2K19, and we'd like to offer you the lead role. And wow. I was fucking floored. I like punched the air. I was just like, what? Like, I turned on AC/DC immediately and just cranked it all the way up. Like, I was on cloud nine. And every experience I've had working with those guys at 2K, like, I know 2K20 was kind of a clusterfuck. There's an entire backstory to that I know very little about, and even the parts that I do know, I'm not sure I'm allowed to talk about it, so I'm just not gonna. But working with those guys is such a pleasure, and again, to grow up a gamer and grow up a passionate wrestling fan and to be able to work on the WWE's flagship game is still, literally, it's surreal when I say that it happened. I still have a hard time believing that it actually happened.
Man, that's wonderful. I mean,
yeah, it's go after your dreams, people. Go after your dreams. You never know where it's going to take you.
And not only that, but the fact that, you know, anyone who's done entertainment, who's auditioned for anything, you know that fact. You don't hear anything within 5 days. It's like, okay, you just kind of let it go.
That's why the phrase is don't call us, we'll call you. And if they don't call you, then you didn't get it. That uncertainty is terrible, and it's enough to drive some people like away from entertainment because they can't handle not knowing.
Exactly.
It sucks too, because you never know when the next gig is going to come, but it's part of the beast. You just got to get used to being rejected.
Yeah. Well, let's wrap you up here really quick. Tell us about MLW going to my home territory, Cicero, Illinois, in Chicago there for the big pay-per-view that's going on in April.
Yeah, I don't think it's a pay-per-view.
Okay.
I think it's going to be a Fusion TV taping. We do 4 weeks of television at a time. But you're close in that the last time MLW was in the Chicago area, it was for our first ever pay-per-view, which was Saturday Night Super Fight. So we're, you know, Chicago's always been really good to MLW. We cannot wait to come back. It's going to be at Cicero Stadium on Saturday, April the 18th. And, you know, you can get your tickets right now. I don't know. Cicero Stadium and Intimidation Games is like, Saturday Night Super Fight was my first proper gig with MLW. So, like, even though it was my second show with MLW, but it was my first full-blown show. And so it was like, I was a nervous wreck because it was worldwide pay-per-view. It was my first time calling live wrestling on for a televised audience. And so to come back, you know, what is this, like 6 months later or so, and just have such a better grasp on my role and what's required of me, and also I'm now enough at ease that I can let myself have a little bit more fun when I do it. So it's I cannot wait to come back.
Well, you know, honestly, if you could get Shivani to put in a good word at AEW for you, maybe we can get Excalibur out of there and get you in.
Hey, you just said it. Saying. You said it. I did. You said it. I did.
I'll second that.
Are you guys not digging Excalibur? I think he does good work.
He does do good work, but it's the mask. That's the problem. You know, I when you're looking at your commentators, you know, you want to pretend that we, you know, we take what you do seriously. When you have a mask on, it's kind of throws that off a little bit. And that's just for me. I mean, for everyone else, it might seem like, you know, it's real to, you know, legit for them. But for me, it's like, dude, come on, man. Take it off now.
Well, what about the mask is what about the mask takes away from his credibility, or what about it doesn't keep you? What about it keeps you from taking him as seriously?
Well, go ahead, man.
Are you thinking like is he trying to be too much of a character, or you know, I know that the quote unquote heel commentator is not necessarily in style nowadays, but like. I'm curious, like, what is it about the mask that you're just kind of like, eh?
I think so. For me, if someone's going to come to, you know, if they're going to have a mask on, I want to see them walk into the ring. I want to see them you know, putting on a presentation, put it on entertainment, put it on actually wrestling. But when it comes to actually... in front of a camera as a commentator, it just makes it a little bit difficult for me to see that as being real or legit, if I could use that word.
Okay. Yeah, of course.
You know what I mean? So that's just what it is for me. I mean, now I don't mind if a wrestler come and they're sitting in from a commentator, because of course they're still being who they are. I mean, they're doing their job, they're doing their work, but it just, from this point on, if he were to say, you know what, guys, I just want to go ahead and take this mask off now and do commentary, just showing my face, that right there would just, to me, show the seriousness in what they do.
Okay, that's fair. So him being behind a mask keeps you from taking his commentary seriously. Absolutely. When you're trying to suspend your disbelief.
Right, exactly.
That's fair.
Yep, that's exactly.
And the thing is, I mean, he's growing, there's no doubt. But it's just an odd matchup. Do you think it's one too many?
Like, do you think the three-man booth is a little bit too much?
I think they have work to do with it. The chemistry is not fully there.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Go ahead.
I know. I was going to say, maybe if JR was like maybe a producer and not necessarily on mic, then Shivani and Excalibur could maybe have chemistry. But, okay. You know, I just think that It's like right now you've got three different shapes. You got like, you know, a circle, a square, and a triangle, and you're trying to cram them together, and it just doesn't work. You know, and I feel like someone like you when you do your commentating, it's you have more of a grasp on the on the story sell itself, what actually needs to be sold as a broadcaster in that position. I think he's still learning that.
That could be. I mean, I could see that point. He's, if I'm not mistaken, he came from PWG. And so like he's been calling a lot of these moves and a lot of these, like he's so familiar with the talent on the roster. I think that's why he's a great fit for play-by-play. I do think there's something to be said for somebody, one of those three, feeling like a third wheel when, you know, you've got play-by-play, you've got color. You know, I don't know that there needs to be the quote-unquote analyst, like the Mike Tenay position.
Right.
I don't know who it would be of those three, because obviously JR is an amazing storyteller. Excalibur knows the name of every move, and Shivani like can pretty much do it all. So he's there to, I guess, not necessarily pick up the pieces, because I don't think JR and Excalibur between the two drop any pieces, but
right.
But I do see your point. There's maybe too many cooks in the kitchen.
And you don't have that feel of, you know, it might be even different if you had that feel of, if you had another wrestler with either, you know, Shivani or JR calling it, and then you could have Excalibur as a face or a heel and the other wrestler as, you know, the opposite of him.
Right, right.
You know, play off that kind of natural thing, which then you're just copying the WWE. But
well,
it's still,
WWE does not have a trademark on any particular commentary style.
But it works. It feels a little more natural.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, AJ, look, man, you've said it all today, and we appreciate it.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on, guys. I had a great time. Yeah. I was really happy to hear that I could fucking swear, too. I like adding some salt and pepper to my language.
Right. Well, hey, we're going to definitely have you back on again, man, because I'm sure...
I'd like that.
Yeah, man, we could cover a lot more. So until then, everyone, just continue to keep watching MLW, man. They're doing great stuff, man, and listening to AJ does his commentary is just awesome. So we appreciate it,
man. Thank you.
Keep it going, and with that,
Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting.